Okay. That was just a practice.
Deep breath.
Do I begin?
You can start anytime you want, 3 minutes, and we'll ask you some questions, okay?
Awesome. Great. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was just sitting down with Fox News, and you saved me. It is wonderful to be here with all of you. Many of you I have seen under different roofs in different places. My name is Martin O'Malley. I am the former mayor of Baltimore, former governor of Maryland. I'm a Democrat, and I'm running for president of the United States for one reason and one reason only. And that is to rebuild the American dream that you and I share. You and I are part of a living, self-creating mystery called the United States of America. But the promise that's at the heart of this nation that we share is a very concrete thing. And it is the promise that wherever you start, through your hard work, through your talent, you should be able to get ahead and do better by your kids and give them a better life. Right now, that American dream is up against the ropes. I can promise you this right off the bat, that if I am president of the United States, I will not have Larry Summers or Robert Rubin in my inner circle as an economic advisors. Our economy is not money. Our economy is people. It is all of our people. And this was the truth our parents and grandparents recognized, and this was the truth that we need to return to again today. We need to rein in the sort of reckless behavior on Wall Street that tries to tell us how to build an economy that benefits only the very few. And we need to stop stumbling backwards into bad trade deals that offshore American jobs and offshore American profits. I have traveled all across our country over the course of these last couple of years and now all across your state. And I am very, very clear about one thing, and that is the people of our country want new leadership. They want to get things done again. The good news is when we elected a new president 8 years ago, he saved us from a second Great Depression and the disastrous trickle-down policies that we're going to see on display tonight in the Republican debate, or shall we call it an audition for the Koch brothers. And we now have had 65 months in a row of positive month-over-month job growth. But when 70% of us are earning the same now or less than we were 12 years ago, our economy isn't working. Our country isn't working. You want wages to go up? We've got to make it easier for people to join unions and bargain collectively, and we've got to raise wages. So in conclusion, with these 3 minutes, there is no one running for president of the United States in either party who has a better pro-worker, pro-labor record than I do. I don't just make progressive promises. I get progressive results, and that's what I've done for 15 years. Thank you very much. Vote for me.
We'll start with President Trumka then.
Welcome, Governor, and thanks for being with us.
But
more importantly, thank you for a lifetime of helping and working supported workers.
Thank you.
This is a hardball for you. Would you support raising the federal minimum wage, and to what level? And what specific steps would you take to raise wages for all Americans, not just those making minimum wage?
This is the central question on the table of our democracy, folks. How do we get wages to go up again rather than down? As governor, we were the first state in the nation to pass a living wage. We extended prevailing wages to all of our construction projects, including school projects. I raised the minimum wage to $10.10 in the year before I left office. In two counties, we raised it to $12.80, and I am the first candidate in this race of either party to endorse raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, at wherever and however we can. Will there be differences, and will the metro areas move out in front of some states? Sure they will. But we need to get wages moving up again, not just the minimum wage, but paying overtime pay for overtime work again. Back in the 70s, two-thirds of us made overtime pay for overtime work, and then we stopped raising it. Overtime pay for overtime work, making it easier rather than harder for people to join unions and bargain collectively, not just for the sake of those members who have union jobs, but for the sake of all wages. You want to look at where wages fell off and decoupled from productivity? It was right around the time that we saw the big declines in union membership and this red tide of right to work that started sweeping across state after state. We need to make it easier rather than harder for women to participate in our workforce with paid family leave, and we need to make the investments that only we can make in rebuilding our infrastructure, our roads, our bridges, our tunnels, a smart, clean electric grid. These are the things that I did as governor. These are the things we need to do as a country in order to get wages moving in the right direction rather than the wrong direction.
Second question, the United States lags behind other nations when it comes to investing in infrastructure. What specific infrastructure improvements need to be made for the United States to be competitive globally, and how would you fund it?
There's a whole range of infrastructure investments that we need to make as a nation. And that's what, now part of the genius of our country is that in generation after generation, we found ways to include more and more of us in the economic, social, and political life of our country. And one of the critically important ways we've done that is by investing ourselves, all of us together, us, you period, S period, in rebuilding our roads and tunnels and bridges. But now the modern infrastructure of rural broadband that can connect the whole country and small businesses and our schools, and also in a clean, smart energy grid. I am the first candidate in this race to advocate and put forward a plan to take us to a clean, 100% clean electric grid by 2050. And we can create 5 million jobs in the course of building out the new infrastructure required to meet this threat of our times. How do we do it? We do it the old-fashioned way. We do it by actually paying for it. I have the scars to prove that doing these things is not easy, but it's what leadership's about. Three times I had to work with my state legislature to modernize our gas tax, which hadn't been raised since 1992 or something. But eventually we made the argument. Eventually we put together the consensus. That's what real executive leadership does. It doesn't follow the easy and the popular. It makes the argument for the things that we have to do in order to rebuild our country and rebuild our infrastructure. That's what we did in Maryland, creating a faster rate of job creation than our neighbors in Virginia or Pennsylvania, who mostly tried to cut their way to prosperity. That's never worked. Instead, we made our schools number one. We set all sorts of records and investments in school construction, which also put people to work, and we ended up coming out of the recession ahead of our neighbors by doing that. And that's what we need to do again as a country. Next generation of rail, next generation of a smart electric grid, and also the new infrastructure, that of broadband and the cyber connectivity that we need to compete in a global economy and create jobs here in the United States. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Governor. Thanks for being here today. Our immigration system is broken, tearing families apart and creating a shadow economy that allows unscrupulous employers to exploit workers. What would you do to resolve this important issue?
This also fits within the work that we share together of getting wages to go up in our country rather than to go down. We talked about a few of the things that we have to do to make wages go up. But a couple of other very important ones. One is moving to a point where college degree can actually be obtained debt-free. We are saddling all sorts of families with a mountain of debt that holds back our economy and holds back middle-class families. Another piece is the one that you mentioned, comprehensive immigration reform. It is a drag on wages for our Republican Congress to continue to refuse to provide a legal path to citizenship for 11 million of our neighbors who very oftentimes work off the books in the shadow economy. That's a drag on wages every bit as much as efforts to reduce union membership is a drag on wages. So I put forward about 3 weeks ago the most comprehensive plan for immigration reform in order to get 11 million of our neighbors on the books, living in the open economic and social life of our country. And we need to make the argument that this is something that we must do, not just for the latest group of new American immigrants. And another day they were Irish or German or Italian. Today many of them are from our own hemisphere and Latino, although actually I think Chinese is actually a growing group in recent years. But this is something we have to do for our country's economy. This is something we have to do to get wages to go up again. And as president, I intend to work tirelessly to forge a new consensus to pass comprehensive immigration reform in order to get wages to go up again for all Americans. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Governor.
Good afternoon.
Too many Americans are being robbed of a secure retirement by anti-worker CEOs and politicians. What changes, if any, do you favor to Social Security, Medicare, or pensions? And what other ideas do you have to ensure that Americans have an opportunity to retire with dignity?
This is a huge issue for our country. It used to be that, and I look around this room, many of us remember being told that retirement is a three-legged stool, right? Remember that one? Your pension, your personal savings, and Social Security. Now a lot of Americans are trying to balance their retirement on one leg of that stool. And some of them are trying to balance their with all sorts of other debts that they did not have before this recession and those on Wall Street wrecked our economy. I am in favor not of privatizing Social Security, not of cutting Social Security, but of actually expanding Social Security and being willing to pay for it. I am also in favor of going to the next, taking the next hill, if you will, in healthcare reform to bring down the avoidable costs that come from repeat admissions to hospitals by patients that have very uncoordinated and discoordinated care. We've done this in Maryland. We avoided $100 million just last year in Medicare costs. And those are the sort of innovations, dialing up the wellness, reducing avoidable hospital admissions, that will also help us protect the solvency of Medicare and Medicaid as well. But after the mess that was made of our economy by trickle-down economics and sometimes our own complicity as a party in the reckless behavior of the mega big banks on Wall Street, we are seeing a lot of Americans heading into those retirement years, and they look anything but golden from their standpoint. So now is the time that we have to step up and strengthen and expand Social Security, not cut it, not shrink it, and we can do that by at some point lifting the cap in terms of income at the point at which people begin to again repay into that critically important Social Security net, which is also investments we make in protecting our entire economy.
Governor, I want to thank you for, one, being one of the first to come out against fast-track authority and against the proposed TPP. Since you opposed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, would you make changes to it, or would you scrap the agreement completely? And what standards would meet your criteria for trade agreements with other nations?
I have led trade delegations, Mr. President, all over the world to sell Maryland products, engineering services, all sorts of things. So I also joined with a couple of unions. I believe it was UAW. I don't want to misspeak. I believe it was UAW and probably UFCW. Anyway, let me just speak for myself. I supported the trade deal with South Korea. And my test is this. As Americans, we should lead, our role in the world is to lead by, example, the cause of a rising global middle class. That's good for the security of our nation. It's good for our prosperity. It's good for the future of our children. Trade deals that raise standards for workers and trade deals with like-minded nations that raise protections for the environment, I believe, are therefore good for the United States. Trade deals that lower standards for workers, trade deals that lower protections for the environment, are bad for the United States. And I know that many of you remember NAFTA well. We were given all sorts of great promises for the great things that would happen because of NAFTA. And now that all the manufacturing jobs that you used to see in places like Newton and from Maytag, first they went to Mexico, then they went to China. Our trade deals should not be designed to create a greased chute to send American jobs abroad in the name of corporate multinational profits. Genuflect, please, when you say corporate multinational profits. We should instead be building up our own economy, mindful of the circulatory nature of economy, and mindful that when workers earn more money, they spend more dollars, and the entire economy grows. If we make the investments that we must on the basics of food and fuel and energy and the things that we need to produce here. So, in summary, I'm for trade deals so long as they actually raise standards for workers and the environment. I'm not for trade deals and that lower standards for workers and the environment. And I'm particularly opposed to secret negotiated trade deals that we're not allowed to read before our Congress is forced to vote on them. What the hell have we come to as a country?
Employees perform at all levels of government are important, yet we continue to underfund them. How would you address this issue, and would you end practices such as sequestration without imposing further cuts to federal employees' pay and benefits?
Yeah, look, I'm very appreciative of the hard work the public employees do. I don't subscribe to the notion that our government is our enemy. We were sold that bill of goods many years ago, and we're still trying to shake ourselves off of that narrative. I have, as governor, I was responsible for more cuts than any governor in modern history, but I was also responsible for greater levels of investment than any governor in modern history to our schools, protecting our defined benefit plan as a state rather than scrapping it. Wasn't easy. Employees had to do more, state had to do more, but we came together to defend it. And I extended collective bargaining to greater numbers of people than probably any governor in the country during that 8-year period of time. Home health care workers, child care workers, departments of state government that did not have collective bargaining before, passed fair share legislation, oftentimes had to do it by executive order first, and then I'd go back and get the legislature, after it was already done, to put it into state law. And then we went back and did fair share for teachers as well. I've been an executive, and I'm the only candidate in the Democratic Party's race for the nomination who's been an executive for 15 years and received many awards for bringing effective management to government, measuring performance, getting things done, bringing openness, transparency, and accountability, and making our public schools the number one public schools in America for 5 years in a row. I would not have been able to accomplish any of the things that we accomplished as a city in our difficult turnaround years or as a state through those difficult recessionary years if I did not work collaboratively with the men and women who were doing the job of making progress in our government. Wasn't always able to give the raises that I wanted to, given the recession. But by golly, I made a point of making sure we tried to all get through this together. And I constantly said that laying off public employees in a recession would make our recession worse, not better. And we already have one of the most effective, if you look at per capita ratios of public employees to citizens. It's already smaller, I think, than it's been at any time since the 70s, at least in our state. So I value the work of public employees, and I think our federal government should become a model employer, especially on things like, you know, federal workers' comp and other issues where federal employees get a raw deal. So I'm in favor of the federal government becoming a model employer, leading the edge of greater respect and security for workers, not a laggard.
Governor O'Malley, currently around 11% of the workforce is unionized and have the ability to bargain with their employers. What changes in law or federal rules and regulations would you support to ensure that every American who wants to join a union is able to do so free from employer interference?
Yeah, I think we need to do a few things on this score. Let me mention a couple. I think we need to revisit the National Labor Relations Act, and I think we need to make it easier, not harder, for workers to have their voice heard and to be able to have a union certified. I think we need to shorten the time to elections, and I think we also need tougher penalties in order to prevent employers from breaking the law, in order to prevent workers from having their voices heard. And I would be in favor of working with you to revamp our laws in order to modernize it for these times. I also think that we need to look at this so-called shared economy and figure out better ways to make sure that if people are participating in the shared economy, they're not excluded from shared security for the sort of safety nets that we have in place to protect workers in every sector.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, last question, Governor. Senator Tammy Baldwin recently introduced a bill that tries to slow down the revolving door between the executive branch and Wall Street, in part by shutting down the golden parachutes people get when they leave big banks and go into government. Would you support legislation like this, and what other steps would you take to curb Wall Street excess?
Thank you. I am the first candidate in this race to put out a comprehensive plan for reining in Wall Street excesses. It is not too much for us as Americans to expect our federal government to protect Main Street from Wall Street. But that's not how it is right now. There are five banks that control over half of the assets of the banks of the United States of America, and they have actually, and back in the 90s, we gave them the ability, in essence, to gamble on the market with our money and then force us to bail them out when they make bad bets. That's not capitalism. That's the rigged game. When a bank becomes too big to fail, too big to jail, too big to manage, then it's too damn big. Part of our plan advocated closing this revolving door and having longer periods of time when after people leave public service. Part of it also involves putting people as the chief executive in place at the SEC and also the attorney generals of the Justice Department that will actually restore the deterrence of robust prosecutions. These guys, some of the biggest banks are fined again and again and again and again. Billions of dollars in fines, never forced to admit, never forced to admit guilt. They write off a lot, large portion of these as the cost of doing business. And so I would put people in place that will actually restore a robust prosecutorial deterrence. I would push legislation that actually restores Glass-Steagall, and I believe every candidate in our party should have to state where they stand on that. Thank you. Is this my time?
Well, you got about 10 minutes. It's your time. Yeah.
So I could sing every verse of Joe Hill?
However you want to use it.
I can do it, too. But let me conclude with this. I want to thank you for what you do every single day to make our country a better and a stronger place. Without a strong country, we don't have a chance of giving our kids a better future. And one of the more troublesome questions I've asked all across our country is this one. We'll ask it here. By show of hands, how many of you believe very firmly you've enjoyed a better quality of life than your parents and grandparents? If you believe that, raise your hands. Thank you. Second question. How many of you believe just as firmly that your children and grandchildren will enjoy a better quality of life than you've enjoyed? Raise your hands. Couple. That is the question that's at the center of this table of democracy that you and I share. Our economy isn't money, it's people. The good news is we need only return to our true selves and start acting like Americans again in order to build an economy that works for all of us, to educate our children at higher and better levels, to make a college degree something that every family's kid can obtain without taking on a mountain of debt, to raise the minimum wage however we can, wherever we can, to $15 an hour and always keep it above the poverty line. Pay overtime, pay for overtime work, strengthen Social Security, make it easier, not harder, for people to bargain collectively for better wages. Make it easier rather than harder by passing paid family leave so that women can participate fully in our workforce. Equal pay for equal work. These are the challenges of our times. And squaring ourselves to the challenges ahead and transitioning to a clean energy future that actually employs more of our people, building important things that can only be built here. Look what's happened in Iowa just over the last 15 years. 30% of your energy is now supplied by Iowa wind. And the great thing about some of those big turbines and propellers is they're too damn big to be shipped in from China, so you gotta build them here. That's the sort of circulatory economy that we need to construct. And there's plenty of work to be done. Designing a whole new generation of clean buildings, living buildings, net zero homes, clean energy grids, smart grids, the ability to take that energy from the plains and take it to population centers, to create the vertebrae off the East Coast that allow us to do offshore wind to supply those cities. These are all of the things that a great people does. There's work to be done. There is no progress without a job. You know, the great poet laureate of the American dream, Bruce Springsteen, once asked, is a dream a lie if it don't come true? Or is it something worse? We have so concentrated over the course of 40 years wealth and corporate power so tightly in the hands of so few that it is literally taking opportunity out of the homes, the wallets, the neighborhoods of the many. And when any nation reaches this point in her history, there's only two paths forward, and only one of them is good. We can either rebalance for the sake of the common good that we share, our national economy, and make it work for all of us. Or the other path is pitchforks, or stones, or rocks. More of them in the hands of more and more unemployed young American men and women. I vote for the sensible rebalancing. I believe that we are a great people. I believe that we are on the threshold of a new era of American progress, and it only requires new leadership, and that we have the guts and the courage and the faith in one another to join forces and walk through that door, to do the things that we have always done as Americans, to recognize that there is dignity in every single person, in every family, and there is dignity in all work, and that no one who works hard and plays by the rules should have to raise their child in poverty. We are Americans. We make our own future, and that's what we need to do right now, not just for our sakes, but for the sake of our children and our children's children and this planet that we share. I need your help. Thank you very, very much.